Hey there, and welcome to the Movers and Mavericks podcast brought to you by WeMove. This episode, we bring you three conversations from this year's Exhale Festival. Exhale is a festival of like minds who come together and share, learn, and experience ideas of movement, healing, and more importantly, good vibes. We went to hang out with friends here for the day and found ourselves meeting the next three people, and the opportunity to share their ideas was too good to pass up. First up, we speak to Tristan Kobayashi, a coach who is exploring the world of bodyweight and calisthenics. And I wasn't expecting his backstory, but then again, there's a story and learnings from everyone if we're present enough to hear them. It's a great quick entry into Exhale. Next up, we speak to Nicola Price, who we knew of but had not connected her to the breathing movement we've been following since day one at WeMove. Nicola runs Inspirational Breathing, an organization which uses the healing power of the breath to release our potential, heal trauma, and ultimately get more from life. In the arena of sports, we can often get bogged down with the performance being about the numbers, and Nicola makes a real case for connecting with our breath to delve deeper into what's holding us back. Oftentimes, working harder isn't the way to make the gains we want. And finally, we catch up with Mark Aquaviva on a real strong recommendation from Carl Four from episode 9. Now, Chris and I attended Mark's class prior to the recording, and for ease of definition, Mark practices yoga. He's a yoga teacher, but that doesn't celebrate Mark's ideas about movement and the relationship we have with our body. At the end of the practice, I felt slightly bamboozled and my body was asking loads of questions about how to get out of my own way and develop my practice. It was a very good spend of 2 hours. Each conversation is around the 25-minute mark. We could have gone on with each one, but it felt right to bring you these three connected individuals in this shorter format. As always, let us know what you think by sending us a message on Instagram at WeMoveMagazine. Leave us a review on iTunes and or Stitcher if you're into what we're doing, and enjoy the show. So we're here with Mark Aquaviva, and we've just been practicing with him in a workshop at the Exhale Festival on a very rainy Sunday. It was really interesting.
We should just quickly say the context to the background noise.
We are sat in our car, and any background noise is rain on the car, but it's quite atmospheric. It was a really interesting class. I've heard about you through Carl. Mm-hmm. Carl said that we had to speak to you because of your approach to yoga. Mm-hmm. He would always mention one word, which I heard quite a lot during that, which was relationships.
Okay, good, yeah.
So that's something that I think we could, you know, delve into. But how did this all come about?
Gosh,
your approach to yoga, finding it.
Okay, in a nutshell, it came about through looking for solutions. I came to yoga as an adult with a lot of sort of back pain and other things that I was seeing various osteopaths and, you know, experts about, and then I found the yoga, the Scaravelli inspired thing, which would sort of talked about tuning into the nature of things, which appealed to my sensibilities. And, the first idea was to, instead of all the pushing and pulling to make shapes, which I didn't want to do because my body hurt, there was this idea of letting go of tension, letting go of problems, which sounded good, sounding like a good idea to me. And then because I had quite a few things to deal with, my personal approach to, or personal interpretation of what letting go meant and how you go about letting go came up, you know, it brought forwards my particular approach, as in what works, because that was one of the first things I was taught, was to notice what I was doing and then notice what I thought I was doing, what I wanted to happen, and then to notice whether it was doing the job or not. Because if it wasn't, why was I still doing it? So, and it's a way of approaching what you're doing to refine your actions, you know. So.
And is that something that, yoga, it's not all about the postures, but how it's perceived now is very much, it's posturally driven. it's about the end result of the shape and this idea of letting go. Because Scaravelli sort of sits on one side of it where it's all a bit, well, it's quite soft. But actually, in your... during the workshop...
You worked hard, right?
And yeah, my background's Ashtanga, so it's probably at the other... You know, it could be considered another end of a spectrum.
Do you remember what I said in the class at the end about if you're thinking in terms of this way and that, you haven't found the yogi?
Yeah.
Well, in searching for solutions for myself in my own body, and in doing so, I've kind of found solutions for everyone else as well, it seems. But in searching for solutions for myself, what I found was when there was a this or that idea, it was a this or that choice that was causing the problem in the first place. You know, if you're... to make it less vague, I don't know how to make that less vague, actually.
Well, I think it's fairly clear.
Well, oh, yeah, the idea of working hard, okay? So if when you work hard, your idea of working hard from the Ashtanga approach, you have to work hard to do these postures. The working hard does something good for you, but the way that you do the postures often leads to injury. Mm-hmm. So how is that useful? You know, I just sort of zeroed in to what it is, what the hard work was that was good, that wasn't actually being offered to me in the Scaravelli inspired approach, because I had also the impression, like you did, that Scaravelli inspired was about flopping and dropping, and you know, that's just an interpretation of what the word means. Let go, what the phrase to let go of tension means. If it means a cessation of effort, then okay, that's one interpretation. But like I said in class again, you know, if you say to a dancer, what do you do to let go of tension? They dance. It's an expression, and it depends on your interpretation. And that's what happened for me in the investigation of this koan. How do I let go of tension in order to heal myself? What changed was my ideas of what things meant. So I changed in the end. Yeah. It stopped being... because when I started, I had all these issues with my body, so I felt like I had to do stuff to my body to fix it. Turns out what needed to happen was I needed to change in relationship to my body. And my relationship to life changed. My relationship to how I did things changed. My relationship to the world changed. So... That's what
presumably
happened.
Everything got more, I don't want to say the word easier, because that implies something else.
It depends.
But it got more fluid.
Life got, more flowing. My body got stronger, but not in the way that people talk about strength. My energy increased, but because it took less effort to do things. All sorts of koans involved in this yoga journey that turns everything on its head. And what happens as a result of this practice seems to be a shift of who I am, a shift of how I understand reality. And from what I can gather, that's what the yoga is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. to that end, you talked about paying attention to how it feels. No, you didn't
almost.
Say like that.
Yeah.
Okay, let me put it in the way that we talked about it briefly. I was saying that, you know, I can't remember how I put it, but just
put it how you want to put it.
You get caught up in analyzing how it feels.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's not the same
as opposed to exactly. Mm-hmm. So
there's the thing that's going on, and then there's your relationship to it. And for example, headstand. Okay, if you're someone that's scared of hurting your neck in headstand for whatever reason, okay, you'll feel pressure on your head and you'll say, oh, it hurts my head. If you're someone that likes the idea of being upside down, you'll feel pressure on your head and go, oh, there's pressure on my head. It's there is what is going on, and then there's your relationship to it, and the relationship to it is the interpretation. And that's not what I mean by tuning into what the body is saying to you. That's what you're saying to the body in response to the sensations. What we need to do to understand how things work is simply tune into what the body is saying, which involves putting yourself aside and finding some degree of objectivity, I suppose. So, you know, you take into account the reality of what you're doing. as in, you know, if you're lying on the floor and you're relaxing and you feel something in your spine, some people will think something's going wrong. If you're not used to feeling something in your spine, if you take into account the fact that you're lying on the ground on a mat and a yoga mat and you're being kind to yourself, you might realize that maybe that's not what's going on. Maybe that's my spine starting to move, for example. Maybe, yeah. It's a good thing. So, you know, your relationship to the sensation is different from the actual sensation itself. So what I'm talking about in terms of tuning into what the body is saying, just tune into what the body is saying, not to what you think it means. That's a secondary thing that happens afterwards. That will change if you're open to other ways of seeing things.
I realise this is now a question from a mental perspective.
It's okay.
An analysis perspective.
Yeah. Well, we do that as well. So,
Something hurts in my body. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of it. I'm feeling it. How do I then understand what that...
Give me an example. Because I have to be in response to
yeah, sure. Okay. Well, let's say like my lower back hurts.
Okay.
And how do I know what that feeling is telling me?
And are you doing yoga at the time, or is it just
I'm hypothetically talking. So
yes. So hypothetically, are you doing yoga at the time, or
no? Let's say that my back just hurts.
Okay. All right. So the body is intelligent. Okay. So the back hurting is telling you something. It's telling you that you are doing something that is overworking some part of your body, or that there is something wrong. Okay. Now, the mind's intelligence can decide to either react and decide that it is wrong, the issue is there, it is happening to me, or the mind can expand a little. And the way I like to look at things is when the body's complaining about something, it's complaining about a relationship. Sometimes between you and the body, but on a specific. In a specific case like your lower back is not a thing that's happening to you. It's a relationship between what you're doing with your feet and legs and everything below your lower back and what you're doing in space with everything above your lower back. If you take your attention to those things, you can do it now, you know, just in your awareness, but also in your physicality, because it's not thinking about those things. So if you take your attention to how you're touching the ground, for example, how you're touching the seat if you're sitting, and also everything above the lower back, where you are in space, how you're in space, whether you're forwards, whether you're back, whether you're to the right, to the left, and engage with those things until the relationship that is between those things doesn't hurt anymore, through breathing and through the release of the breath, try it out, so you know what I mean. Anyone that's listening, try it out. Yeah. If you take your attention to engaging with in those two directions, seeing the area of interest as a relationship between those things, through the arrival and release of the breath, you will have changed something. And if you can do it through a full cycle of the breath, you probably resolve your back issue. Same is true for a knee joint, for a hip joint, an elbow joint, carpal tunnel syndrome, IBS, anything you like. It's a generic approach to seeing things that understands things as a relationship rather than things that are happening to you.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, then you're using your intelligence in a useful way. Mm. Only took me 20 years or so to work that one out, but but knowing it does nothing. It's in the practice of it. So, you know, when I was teaching that workshop, I don't know if you noticed, every now and again, if I saw people listening with their heads, I just stopped and said, well, you've got to practice, because otherwise you don't know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I got you to try it out whilst I was talking. Because as an idea, it can make total sense, but it's meaningless. The only place it makes sense is in your body.
Charlie in the class asked you a good question with regards to how do you deal with resistance. In my mind at that time, I was thinking traditional yoga teacher training gets taught in a very certain way, which is all about the asanas and mm-hmm. postures, etc. And your approach is completely different.
Yeah.
Well, just got these thoughts going on in my head.
How on earth?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure that people come to you with resistance of, you can even sit sit in the class. Mm-hmm. You're trying to bring people's awareness into how they're feeling and how they're they're touching, and they instantly go into, you know, flipping up into a handstand or a downward dog in a certain way. How do you meet that resistance and how do you approach it?
You meet it. You don't fight it. You don't push it away. You don't fuss with it. I don't know. It's I have this poem that I use to guide people's practice, and the first line of the poem is "So from here, just as you are." That's it. Just as you are. So if what you are is feeling resistant, pushy, doing, it's fine, but just notice. So the next line is "Become quiet and present." So if you're doing all that stuff, just become present to it. That's a good starting point. And if I'm meeting, if someone's coming to me, if they're projecting their resistance onto me, I will use it for support. I will use it to support my approach. So, because I've been doing it long enough, I've looked at yoga from so many different angles, and I've investigated all types of yoga, not to make my thing right, but to see what everyone else is banging on about, because they obviously do it for a good reason. And whenever, whatever kind of yoga I've approached, no matter how, inverted commas, wrong it seems to be in terms of philosophy and other things, I've approached it looking for what it is that people get out of it. What do they like about it? And if what they like about it is control, for example, then what I begin to look at is, what does the word control mean? And I use the example of when you feel seasick, you're trying to control the movements of the wave. So extrapolate that to a skill. If you want to understand control, do you want the control of someone that is rigidly sort of organizing, stopping things from breaking? I don't know. Or do you want the control of a surfer? No, a surfer isn't controlling the waves, nor are they controlling their bodies. The control is an apparent outcome of total presence to what is as it is, in response, moment to moment. And so I would meet someone that wanted control with something along those lines. I would meet someone that wanted strength with an illustration that the effort that they're putting in to be strong is not the same as the strength that requires no effort. You know, so you meet whatever resistance is there with the thing that they're interested in. That's the way I do it anyway. Again, take me 20 years to get there. when I was trying to persuade people to do something other than what they're doing, it just created resistance. Mm. And I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to offer a freedom within whatever it is they want to do. There's nicer ways of doing whatever you want to do, and if you can find ways of tuning into natural body intelligence, however that is, rather than imposing from the brain and the learning and other things on the body, if I can persuade you to do that just for 30 seconds or so, you'll find something. And if that encourages you to do more of it in your own practice, then great. I've done my job, you know.
Mm. So. Yeah. We keep hearing it a lot, don't we? Just have to listen to the body and trust the body.
Yeah, and kind of get out of your own way.
Mm-hmm. It's becoming more and more understood, actually, because you know, people have been bashing away at control and pushing and pulling and all that and it doesn't serve.
Mm.
You know? And you can achieve the postures, you can achieve the shapes, and well, so did gymnasts before yoga, you know.
Yeah.
But your average gymnast breaks, you know, mid 20s or something.
Yeah, well, it's a rigid way of approaching.
Yeah. And it's not wrong, you know, but ballerinas, they hurt themselves. But there's a lot of details in ballet that actually are related to good relationships in body. But it's just what you use these things for. So it brings you around to your intent. You know, what are you doing it for?
Is that the part that people forget then? like the controls? Because you start, say, gymnastics or yoga, and you don't really...
You do it for the love of it.
You do it for the love of it, and then it becomes a, oh, I'm good at it, and then the control, because you're kind of trying to hold on to being good at it.
I think it goes wrong when it becomes a performance for others, because then you cease doing it for yourself. You're starting to do it to impress. And when, you know, if you start, if you think about moving and you start to think about how you're moving and whether it looks right or not, instantly you're really tense and instantly you're completely unnatural. And then you're in this situation where you have an unnatural relationship to what you're doing, but you want it to look natural. So you then learn about what to do unnaturally to make it look natural. It's a whole mad scenario that basically begins when you step out of your centre and self-refer by other people's opinions. Mm. And yoga itself, you know, if yoga is what it's meant to be, you know, it's supposed to be a tool that helps you find yourself. It's not supposed to be something that pushes you away from yourself and defines you by the shapes you make.
Yeah.
And what I found, and most people's response is they do that kind of yoga and then they give it up because it doesn't work. And they do something else and they find something more natural. What I've done with it is I've taken the yoga and said, well, this is supposed to be natural. And I've sort of kind of reinvented what's important about it in terms of what you take your attention to. And because it is a mire, you know, if you start, like you were saying to me, if you, the idea of seeing how you feel in the body, I was saying to you that thing that people do when they're interpreting how they feel, it's kind of a neurotic thing to do. And it's normally, naturally, the only time we would do that is if we were injured. If there was something going wrong, then we'd be called to check in with what it feels like and why. Right? So doing that deliberately is a weird thing to do. And it kind of makes people go neurotic. Whereas what we need to do is we need to learn how to take our attention in useful directions. Whilst we self-refer, whilst we listen to how the body is responding. And that's what I've done, that's what I've developed over the years, is ways of guiding people's attention into that which is useful. And then the postures become incidental. And actually they become quite a bit more expressive than your usual making shapes, I think. Now, did you notice in the class people were actually doing quite sort of extraordinary looking things?
Mm.
But it wasn't because they were showing us how extraordinary they were or how hard they were trying. That was happening as a natural result of something awakening, something deep inside expressing through what they were doing. And that's the outcome, I think. That's what we're aiming for. But you can't jump straight to that. What you need to do is take away all the conditioning and all the stuff that put us in the place to want to go to yoga in the first place.
I guess different people respond to it with different in different timely manners.
To yoga generally, or
to
my stuff?
To your stuff. You know, if someone came for a one-on-one class, I guess it radically differs between people.
Yeah, whoever comes to me, I meet them with what they want. So, you know, if someone comes to me wants to do backbend, I'll use the yoga to show them how to get there without hurting themselves. Mm. If someone comes to me with a hurting back, I'll use the yoga to show them how to not hurt their back. And then I'll probably give them something functional to do, like stand up or bend down, or, you know. So the point of the work is you're supposed to take relationships, good relationships, into life. And that's when it becomes actually yoga. So, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. And there's the word relationships again.
Then.
So are people just conditioned into bad relationships, or is there some where's it got lost, in your opinion?
Well, it begins when we start to learn to self-refer by how people think of us. So it begins at school, I guess. But right. It's not. I don't know. It's not like everything's gone wrong. You know,
it still works. Often it looks more. Well, it looks hard work. Often,
and it is hard work for people, yeah. And that's what they're showing us, how hard it is. Mm. because they're used to working hard, showing how hard it is, and getting praised for it. So, you know, it's just what happens. It's the human condition. But it's not to be berated. It's just a fact. It's like, you know, this thing about losing the ego and becoming enlightened. Well, if you didn't have an ego, you wouldn't have a problem, but you wouldn't be a person either. You know, so it's part of the human condition. And one of the joys of it, you know, enlightenment would be nothing unless you'd suffered from having an ego, in which case it would be a massive liberation. I don't know. I get the occasional glimpse, but it's usually at the end of a good yoga session, you know. But it's just for a few moments of freedom from that noise, from that story. That's all, yeah. I think that's all it is. And the same can be true for everything, really. You know, so whatever yoga you're doing, you're interested in the body-mind on some level. And however you're doing it, if you're thinking about your body and doing stuff to it and learning the anatomy and bending it out of shape, okay, that's what you're doing. You're interested at least. And just that activity of being interested in overworking, like I said, will cause some core responses that will awaken something. The only thing that goes wrong with it is fixed mental impressions, as in if we identify with the thing that we're doing, this is who I am, which is happens mostly with yoga teachers, of course, because we make a whole career out of it. If you identify with the thing that you're doing, to allow that to change is like a death of the identity. And that's the same as allowing the ego to change. It's a difficult thing to do directly. You can't. Because it's like inviting suicide of some description. But if you, in the same as with the ego, if you just spend time in nature, you're not in your ego, but you have a nice time, you know. If you spend time in communion with the body, in a natural fashion, then you have a nice time, and you just get a holiday from that story for a bit. And if you're being attached to particular ideas, it's just another human condition that keeps you away from the fun, keeps you away from the joy, and it keeps you away from learning, actually. And you know, I didn't know all this stuff before I did the yoga. It's become obvious through practice. So I've made a career out of realizing that I don't need to know anything, although I've done all the knowing, all the learning, but I've come out the other side realizing that what I need to do is just practice and be with what the body is saying to me. And when I do that, I find out everything I need to know. I don't need to go searching. I can find it out directly. I can experience it directly.
If you're listening. Yeah.
And the body will tell you. And it tells you directly. And this is the thing that I sort of specialize in terms of helping people, because say someone has a knee issue and they've got it diagnosed as an ACL problem or whatever's going on, the technical stuff that is going on, but it's going on for a reason, and the reason is a relationship. Okay, so they come to me with this issue and I use it to show them how to be without that difficulty by taking them into the rest of the body and in relationship to what they're doing in touch and space. What happens is they get a moment of not having a knee problem. So what is it suddenly miraculously healed? No, the ACL is still under strain if they go back to doing things how they used to do them. But if they live in these new relationships, which are actually more whole, more complete, more wholehearted, then the knee problem won't complain anymore. They won't have a problem anymore. Mm. They won't know about it. So it gives me an opportunity to show them how the yoga works. What changes isn't the knee. Mm. What changes is the rest of the person. And it's instant. I promise you, it's instant.
You just have to be open enough to allow yourself to change.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be? If you're having a hard time with anything, why wouldn't you be open to change?
I guess some people just find it really...
That's the conditioning, isn't it?
Change difficult, yeah.
And well, they find change difficult unless they...
I mean, I agree with you, but I'm just saying some people find change really difficult. And
well, because they haven't found an easy way of changing.
Yeah.
But it's not. I don't find that much resistance, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it when I'm talking about it, because we're talking about ideas. Now, if I could get you to practice, you wouldn't have any resistance.
Yeah.
you know, you weren't resisting me in class. But your head might have been having a hard time with understanding what was going on, but your body wasn't.
Sorry. But, yeah. It's just a matter of practice, you know. If you want to go to the shops, you don't sit there thinking about how hard it is, or where, what foot do I put first, and then what happens, and which, you know, how many steps before I turn right. You just go to the shops, and in the process, you work that stuff out.
Yeah.
If you want things to change, you do things differently, and you notice if the thing that you're doing differently is helping or it's not. And it all seems vague and chaotic, because the thing that the mind likes to do is to know what it's doing. That's its job, is to look around, assess what's going on, make a map, and go to sleep, because it knows what's going on. That's the only thing that has resistance, is the decision to be present, because it's harder for the brain to be present than it is to rely on what it knows. But actually, being present is more alive. Because we do it when we're enjoying ourselves or we're having a miserable time. We do it at the height of being, you know?
Yeah.
So some people are drawn to difficulty and drama in order to be present. Other people are drawn to fun and joy and connection. It doesn't make any difference. It's just a way of being present. And if you can decide to do that in your physicality directly, then you'll understand what I mean by being present to the body.
Mm. Awesome.
Cool. Okay, well, that seems like a good place to wrap it up.
Where do people find you?
Okay, yeah. Well, I live in Hove, and I used to travel a lot more, but I now teach in Edinburgh 4 months of the year in autumn, and then the rest of the time in Brighton. I run sort of yoga development courses. This is the full on sort of immersion thing. If you want to work with me properly, there's 1 week in a month, and you can do is 4 weekends. It's a 4 month process. It can be taken all the way to teacher training if you like, but most people that work with us just come for the yoga, really, and we get a few teachers, but quite often it's people that are already qualified that come and do these things. That's at the high end. Other things you can do, you can go to my partner Abigail. She runs regular classes. I'm building a space in my home that I will be using at some point. So far I've mostly done workshops and courses and that sort of thing. Let's see, what else? Oh yes, you can get me for free online. If you go to Facebook, Yoga with Mark, I there's thousands of videos on there where I call it Yoga Solutions. So people ask me questions online about their hips or their shoulders or whatever, and I usually say it's a relationship, and then go through a process, and I guide people through things to practice. And there's loads of videos. They're all about 20 minutes, and with a bit of faff at the beginning or the end, me talking about what I'm doing. Or you can, I've even got some recorded online classes, whole courses. That you can find that if you go to aquavivayoga.com. All of it, you can find that. So, you can buy a 6-week course with me for less than 50 quid, I think. And you get spoon-fed a thing a week with suggestions of what to do for that week. Yes, I'm sort of all over the internet, basically.
I like it.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Mark, great. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks very
really
much.
Really appreciate it.
That's an absolute pleasure. I enjoyed pontificating with you.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right.